This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
They used to say it's as American as mom and apple pie. Can't say that anymore. Both are banned. We first noticed this a few weeks ago when a member from St. Louis called Cori Bush used the term birthing people rather than mothers. That sounded like something out of a dystopian science fiction novel. But now, in just a few weeks, it's gone mainstream. Now the term birthing people has the endorsement of the White House.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, you're going to hear more of Tucker's awesome monologue on this in just a moment. We've got a lot to talk about. Thanks for joining me today. James Herson is going to be stopping by as well. We're talking about this Eucharistic coherence. We're talking about the president. We're talking about so much of the scandal that's out there. We are living in confusing times, and I'm so glad to be able to have a microphone here. I'm so glad that Relevant Radio is able to bring the light of Christ to so much of this confusing language and ideology that I know you have to deal with, and I know especially your kids are now being targeted by. I want to bring something else to you, and I want you to think about this as well. We've been talking about woke ideology, right? I've spoken about this a lot on this side of the year. In another sign of the infiltration of this so-called woke ideology, the Federal Reserve, look, they're supposed to be concerned about things like monetary policy, right? And whether or not there are enough dollar bills floating around out there, they're telling their employees not to use biased language. Wait till you hear what they said. Tucker railed against the political wokeness. I don't know if you caught it the other day. I thought I'd share a little bit explaining how crazy the feds have gotten. Listen to this.
At a hearing yesterday, the deputy director of Joe Biden's budget office explained that you really have to be a bigot to use the term woman.
The budget requests $26 million to reduce maternal mortality and eliminate race-based disparities in outcomes among, quote, birthing people. I've never heard the term before. Can you explain what it means?
Absolutely. There are certain people who do not have gender identities that apply to female or male. So we think our language needs to be more inclusive in how we deal with complex issues.
Uh-huh. This is maybe the least complex issue ever addressed. Mothers give birth, fathers don't. Children are the product of a mother and a father. That's not politics, it's biology. And if you're forcing the rest of us to deny it, then you are a totalitarian who seeks to control reality itself, which is beyond your purview by definition. And it's not just the budget office that's doing this. This show has obtained a document from the Federal Reserve, the internal website at the Fed that its employees read. It's a memo on bias-free language, but of course it's very biased. It instructs staffers not to use words and phrases that may be considered offensive. What's offensive? Founding fathers, man-made, and singular pronouns like he or her.
All right, so that was Tucker sharing a little bit of that. I'll share some more. Let me just give you I'll share with you how broad this is. And again, if you're just joining me, the Fed sent out this guidance to its employees back in April. And here's part of what it said. I'll share the quote. It says, bias-free language recognizes diversity and it avoids stereotyping, demeaning or excluding people on the basis of gender, race, ethnic group, religion, age, ability, disability, or sexual orientation. End of quote. So here are some of the words that they are concerned about, okay? Tell me if you're concerned about these. They don't like the word blacklist, okay? You can't use the word blacklist. How about whitelisted? How about grandfathered? Do you ever hear that term? Oh, that he was grandfathered in. Can't use the word grandfathered. They don't like the term founding fathers. Really? Oh, I can't use the word founding fathers. Manpower, man-made. As Tucker was pointing out, you know, singular generic pronouns like she, he, her, his. You can't use those either. Well, what do you use, right? Employees are instructed to use terms like denied, allowed, legacy, artificial, founders instead of founding fathers. And those pronouns, yep, the Fed is violating basic language rules by telling employees to use plural pronouns such as they, their, theirs, even when they're referring to a single person. This is insane. This is crazy. Where does it lead and how does it end? That's what I want to know. This is insanity. This is coming from the Federal Reserve, right? They should be dealing with monetary policy. And of course, you know, we know that all this kind of stuff has been going on in higher education as well. It's not that wouldn't surprise me if it came out of our institutions of higher learning. But the Federal Reserve, it's infiltrating everything from the highest, you know, corners of government all the way into our elementary and secondary education levels as well. Just one quick example, and just to show you how it's in our schools. One school has gone completely off the charts. I mean, I saw a story this morning. And again, this is just one school, so I don't want to blow it out of proportion here. But this is what we're seeing happen. The names of holidays. They think the names of holidays, all these poor kids, it's going to cause problems for them. You know, we can't use the term Columbus Day. You know, that's just one example. Come October, you're going to hear more about Indigenous People Day. You know, instead of Columbus Day. In Randolph, New Jersey, the local school board there has taken the step of simply removing all holiday names. No holidays, no holiday names on your school calendars. So from now on, students simply have a day off. So Christmas, right? Christmas, New Year's, Thanksgiving. It doesn't matter. They're all gone. We're not going to refer to your day off as, yeah, I'm going to take Christmas vacation. Or, hey, it's New Year's. Let's celebrate. Hey, let's give thanks. It's Thanksgiving. No, can't use those, right? Just a holiday. Even Martin Luther King Day is off the calendar. And guess what? Parents are not happy. They are not happy. Look, I've been keeping my finger on the pulse of this for a long time, just trying to show you where it's percolating, where it's popping up, how consistent it is, and how bizarre it is getting. So you are in the know. As a parent, you're the primary educator of your child. You know, make sure you let that school board know you're not happy. If you are in the workplace, let them know. You know, don't remain silent. You can make a difference. I'm joined today by James Herson, a longtime friend of the broadcast, New York Times best-selling author. He writes the Left Coast Report. It's a column for Newsmax.com, and covers everything from Hollywood and politics to culture. And, of course, the author of a lot of great books. Do two things. One, follow him. You'll be glad you did. At the Jim Jams. That's his Twitter handle, okay? At the Jim Jams. And go to his website, jamesherson.com. Lots of great stuff. Jim, always good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Oh, it's blessed. I'm blessed to be with you. What a great topic. I'll tell you something, though. One of the things we have to dispel is the notion that somehow this is based on anything good. It is not about compassion. You know, in other words, the use of the pronouns he and she, eliminating those pronouns, that is not a compassionate act. That is an evil act. Yeah. And, you know, the great dystopian novelist George Orwell in 1984 talked about this fictional language called newspeak. And it would the idea that George Orwell got for this language was from the co-intern, the com-intern, the Communist International, the teachings of the Communist Party, where there were documents that discussed this idea. And so in Oceania, the fictional country that George Orwell wrote about, this controlled language was ultimately designed to control thinking, which is exactly what's happening here. And it's not, it's a type of thinking that eliminates common sense, scientific principles, and especially notions of biblical and Catholic and Christian ideas that life has a purpose, that there's free will, that there is in fact a designer, a creator, and that things that we constructs that exist in biology are there for a reason. These are all being ignored and ultimately eliminated or attempted to be eliminated by what we call woke, but what really is something much more insidious. We live in a time, Drew, where these battles are no longer political. They're spiritual. They're good versus evil. And this is profoundly evil. As you pointed out, the Federal Reserve, which is a strange amalgam directed by the government, but is a central bank, but its primary purpose is to prevent what's happening right now, inflation. And instead of focusing on our economic security and safeguarding the economy, they're out there playing this game of changing language. And can you imagine that they would say that somehow the founding fathers, which is a long tradition of paying honor to people that put together something completely unique for the time, unique for the world, guided by providence, guided by prayer, put together the most amazing representative government in the history of the planet. Yep. So we kind of honor them with this title, and they superimpose that somehow that harms someone. And it's very similar to what's happening in the church with people who want to make, for example, traditional prayers to be something that are harmful, and including the Lord's Prayer, which is constantly under attack for the use of the same term, Father. And so I think this is it appears on its surface that it's kind of a light subject, but when you really dig into it, these are people trying, this is being directed from outside the Federal Reserve. It may be being directed from outside our country, but they're trying to change thinking, and not in a good way.
That's a really interesting theory you have. You think that there is, I mean, where do you think this is originating from? I mean, to reach the Federal Reserve and make this policy for their employees, you know, where is it originating? Where do you think it's coming from? What's driving it?
Well, I'm not, I have no evidence of where it's coming from, but I think if we notice, right, it seems to be breaking out all over. In other words, all over the government, every agency of the government seems to be doing this. We have our military being purged of people who have the wrong kind of thinking. We have language being changed. We have the critical race theory being taught in schools. We have corporations now engaging in this in the name of compassion, basically excising certain words. And some of them, I mean, I remember it was like a joke years ago that they said they were going to change. And I think they did in some communities. There were manhole covers.
Yeah.
And they said, no, no, you can't call it a sewer cover, a manhole cover. But now, you know, the joke becomes reality. Yeah. Man-made, manpower. I mean, what is that? That's a company, by the way, Manpower, a temporary help company, a temporary employee company. Are they going to have to change their name? I mean, it's absolutely insane. And that's why we have to say, well, what is the real motive here? I do not believe it's grounded in compassion.
Not at all.
And I believe a lot of the policies that we now see originate in a very dark place. And now we know that the White House is directing some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And we know that there are political parties, that portions of political parties directing it. But if we really analyze it, it's, you know, I point out it, the parallels to the kind of dissenting voices in the Catholic Church that want church reforms at any cost. Yeah. And want to change the liturgy and the prayers to make the language conform much like this. It's very similar. And I consider that something that plays in the hands of the enemy with a capital E.
Amen to that. Let's grab a few calls for you. If you want to get in, my guest today, James Herson, Our number, 888-914-9149. Amy is listening in Madison, Wisconsin. She's got a great question for you. She's not alone with this one. Amy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes, my question is based off of one of the comments you said about sticking up for this in the workplace. Being where I am geographically, it's a political hotbed. It is so liberal, and how do you defend that in the workplace while maintaining your employment? You know, my freedom of speech isn't as well respected because I think differently from the majority of people around me, so I'm chastised. But what is, you mentioned how to stand up for it in the workplace, and that's what prompted me to call. You know, people get close to retirement. You can't afford to lose the job, or regardless of where you are in that status, what is something, the younger you are, the easier it is to bounce around from job to job. But once you get in a situation and you're now in this environment where of all of this getting rid of male, female, what is a tactful way to maintain your stance without putting yourself in that peril of job loss?
Great question.
Boy, that is a very great question. And, you know, it really comes down, it's a moral question, because if someone is earning a living for themselves and their family, and there's so many big employers now who are imposing various levels of political correctness and wokeness, you have to discern, because you have to be a good steward and make sure that you don't act rashly in a situation like that that would harm the welfare of your loved ones. But at the same time, when we're taking, you know, they always talk about a hill to die on. What issue would it be where I would have no choice but to take a stand against my employer? Well, it's very clear for those of us, for Catholic Christians and for Christians in general, we stand with the Lord. And if we're asked to do something that is clearly violative of our Christian principles, then we have to take action. Now, there are all kinds of situations today, and I happen to be a lawyer, but I'm not an employment lawyer, but there's a lot of litigation going on about this very topic. In other words, if people are forced out of their job unfairly, arbitrarily, because particularly of religious reasons or even political reasons, that in many states, my state of California, even though it is similar to yours, another one of these very liberal states, there are wrongful termination actions. And that's something, if something like that occurs, you must actually go and talk to an employment lawyer, because but the first step is a moral question. You know, if all of a sudden in a place they say, well, everybody has to use they and their, well, I don't think, I don't agree with doing that, but it may well be that that isn't a hill to die on, and that it may be the more prudent thing to gently protest it, but not lose your pension, your livelihood for your family over they and their. But if they said something involving, you know, you're wearing a crucifix, oh, no, you can't wear a crucifix, then that's a different story. Yeah. So it's one of these discernment things, but that's a, you know, it's a brilliant, great question. And it's, I hope that's helpful, but I know it's not one of these things where you can just say, there's a moral dilemma. There's two moral principles at stake.
Yeah.
Stewardship and your integrity, and you have to balance them.
Yeah, I wouldn't lose my job over it, Amy. You know, but I
certainly
wouldn't comply either. Here's the thing: it's like I hear all the time people refer to Caitlyn Jenner, and you know, Caitlyn is really a man. He's Bruce Jenner, and I tend to refer to him when I speak of him as Bruce. I know he goes by Caitlyn now, and you know, maybe that's not in the same category here, but I think sometimes just speaking the truth, you know, using the right pronoun or calling somebody by their right gender or doing what it is, you can kind of counter back over something like that. I would hope you wouldn't lose a job over that. But I don't know. I'd push back a little bit. That's, maybe it's my nature. But I wouldn't lose my job over it. That's the other thing, too. You know, especially if you're close to retirement.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think it's a great response, but you just get to the point where it's like, this is just so insane. And it's funny, the outside of the area, it says that, you know, the county, it's the county surrounded by the rest of the state that has reality, and that state is just so many square miles of insanity. So,
hang in there,
Amy.
Thank
you both for your...
Yeah,
thank you very much. Thanks for what you do. Yeah, I appreciate listening. Thank you.
We'll
God bless you.
We'll pray for you.
Yeah, and Amy's from Madison, Wisconsin. That is it's kind of a liberal part of the state of Wisconsin. It's the state's capital. Yeah, so you're familiar with what it's like.
Sure,
that's not it.
In Chicago. I've been in Madison and my college age, yes.
All right, Tom's listening in Grand Terrace, California. Tom, hi, you're on the air with James Harrison. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you, Drew. Appreciate it very much. You know, your discussion regarding, I believe, the George Orwell and the idea of a general neutral terms and communists, something that maybe was something, an idea from communism, it reminded me of a paper I had to write in college regarding the definition of a human person. And it took me back to the Garden of Eden, looking at the devil's attempt to destroy the image and likeness of God, the human person. And by taking away that definitive definition, in a way, it's a subtle way to attack the human person and create the idea of you're no more than an object, a thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. You know, looking at it through the spiritual, I think that's true. James, I only have about a minute left, so I'm going to give you the final thoughts, but I think Tom's on the money.
I love what Tom had to say, and it's so true, because God created us in his image. Yeah. God created us with self-expression, free will, and the ability to love, and the ability to come to him and ultimately have fellowship with him. And when systems and governments try to turn us into an object, into matter in motion without free will. And that is exactly what these collectivists believe and have written. Yep. And therefore, it all goes together with a disregard for the sanctity of life and the gift of free will that can't exist in an atheist world, which is why the founding fathers of communism hated it so much. So the end, it is the pillar of totalitarianism.
Yeah. Well, James, always a delight talking. Thanks for making time for us today. Keep up your good work, and please follow Jim on Twitter, his handle, at the Jim Jams. Go to his website, jamesherson.com, and, of course, follow him at newsmax.com, where he writes a Left Coast report. We'll catch up soon, okay, Jim? I'll be back with more. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is a moment of extremely high tension. Both leaders saying the U.S.-Russian relationship is at a low point and setting very low expectations for what could be achieved, but the stakes are very high.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, did you follow any of this historic meeting between President Biden and Vladimir Putin? Today's show just mentioned that tensions were high. A lot of people had anticipations to what was going to come out of that. In fact, my next guest, who's going to be stopping by in a moment, just wrote an article, co-authored it with a number of other authors, on the top five things Biden should bring up in this particular meeting. I can't wait to talk to Alexis Muracek. She's going to be here in a second. But if you're not following this, like I think it's important for us to zoom out and take a big look at U.S.-Russian relations. President Biden, he met with the Russian president in Geneva, in a beautiful place in Switzerland today. And, you know, the two leaders after it was over came out today. It was a good meeting. It was obviously, I think, one full of tension. Biden said that, you know, he raised human rights issues with Putin, and Putin apparently shot back that the U.S. is no place to talk about those when we have riots here at the Capitol and we had the Black Lives protests all over the country. And didn't I say that to you before? When I saw Americans going to the streets and burning buildings, looting, it hurts us on so many levels, not just nationally and internally, but what it does optically, you know, around the world, and how people view what is the greatest nation on the planet, the United States of America. And, you know, we talk about human rights violations with China and the Uyghurs. We take a look at what Putin is doing. These world leaders are going to spin that right around. Biden, of course, was going to talk about the issue of cyber attacks. For a long time, it was always about nuclear armament, right? We have a whole, and that's a great deterrent, right? A lot of people say, oh, it's a deterrent. Would any nation really use them? I pray to God, no. But, you know, we're in a different time. And Russia has been behind many of these cyber attacks. You know, we've seen cyber attacks against a pipeline company. Remember the Colonial Pipeline? Others against beef production companies. We're seeing ransomware hijack and hold people hostage, and a lot of data and corporations. And Putin, of course, has denied he has anything to do with those. But many experts say, hey, he could certainly clamp down on this, and he's given refuge to many of those people in his own country. But what it comes down to really is, can Vladimir Putin be trusted? Can he be trusted? You know, we've seen his long reign. We know he'll probably be in office to about 2036. And he's dealt with a lot of U.S. presidents. So can he be trusted? I don't know. While the meeting was going on, I saw a report earlier today that Russian military, they were conducting one of their largest exercises in the Pacific Ocean since the end of the Cold War. And CBS reported that surface ships and submarines and anti-submarine aircraft and bombers, they were all participating in war games. And they were 300 to 500 miles just west of Hawaii. They were in international waters, but still pretty close to one of our nation states. The Air Force scrambled some fighters, some fighter jets from Hawaii, just to make sure that the Russian bombers didn't stray into our territory. But they stayed where they should have. So in the press conference today, Putin seemed to argue that, you know, America was pinning Russia down as an enemy. And he brought up, of course, the recent cyber security attack that happened in the U.S. And here's what Vladimir Putin said about that.
We know about cyber attacks against a pipeline organization in the United States. And we know that this company had to pay a ransom of $5 million. According to my information, they were returned some parts of this money from electronic wallets, but some parts of this money is still missing. But what does and what do Russian authorities have to do this? We face the similar threats when it comes to one of the key Russian regions and its healthcare system. And we see where these cyber attacks are launched from. We see that these attacks are coordinated from the United States territory. I don't think that the United States authorities are interested in such kind of manipulations. We need to get rid of all kinds of insinuations and innuendo, and we should launch the expert work for the benefit of the United States and the Russian Federation. We have reached an agreement in principle on that, and Russia is ready to do that.
All right, so despite all the smiles and handshakes and nice words at the summit meeting, the two leaders clearly were at odds. And they both held separate press conferences after it was over, and it was clear from those they didn't see eye to eye on a lot of issues. So what does this portend for the future? What will U.S.-Russian relations be like? I'm joined today by my next guest. She's a research associate at, well, for Russia and Eurasia at the Heritage Foundation. It's great to have with me today, Alexis Borachek. And Alexis, thanks for making time for us today. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start first with the cyber attacks. And the meeting, well, maybe let's back up before we get into some of the details. Let's talk about relations. Let's talk about U.S.-Russian relations. You know, I remember Hillary Clinton famously went in there with that reset button. Where are we right now? Going into these meetings, many were saying that the U.S. relationship was perhaps at the lowest since the Cold War. What is the current relationship like? Was this a win for Putin? Was it a win for Biden? How do you see this all shaking out?
So relations between the U.S. and Russia, yes, are at a low right now. I don't know if they're necessarily the lowest that they've been since the Cold War, but they're definitely at a major low right now. For several weeks now, our ambassador to Russia has been home in the U.S. meeting with Biden administration officials, and he is here because the Russian foreign ministry advised him to come here. They didn't tell him, but they advised him. And then Russia sent their ambassador back to the U.S. And then the U.S. Embassy in Moscow is no longer issuing tourist visas to Russian citizens to come visit the U.S. So tensions are very, they're really harsh right now. It's not a good situation. And the U.S. just a couple months ago came out with lots of sanctions out on Russia, and Russia clearly did not like that. And so things have just been really bad. And so I guess that was one of the main motivations going into the summit, to try to restore more of a balance in the relationship.
So you wrote an article. I didn't get a chance to read it yet, but one of my producers is telling me that you co-authored an article with a couple of your colleagues there at Heritage on the top five things that Biden should address, or at least bring to the conversation in this particular meeting. If you have the title of the article, I'd love to have it. Maybe we can link over to it for you as well so people can read it. But let's go through some of those. What did you see of importance? What was the hierarchy of those, and how did the president fare?
Mm-hmm. So the five things that we mentioned in this report are Russia's military adventurism abroad. So that can be in Ukraine or Syria, for example. Another issue is arms control. Another one is the multiple assassinations of Putin critics that have occurred on the European continent. Also cyber attacks, of course, that's a big one. And then Russia's blatant human rights abuses. And positively, President Biden did focus on several of these issues during the summit. But still, I'm not quite satisfied with just all the things that he mentioned at the summit and his tone towards President Putin. I think that he should have held Putin accountable for more of these misdeeds and brought up more of these issues, such as arms control, or maybe talked about the assassinations more.
Yeah, well, let's go through some of those. Let's start with the cyber attacks. How strongly did the president raise that issue? I mean, clearly, I think that's a new frontier, and there's probably a lot that has taken place that has never been reported, and we're going to probably see more of that. What was, the plausible deniability that President Putin used to deny his involvement in them? Because he says, hey, I had nothing to do with those. I don't think most experts believe that, but let's talk with cyber attacks. What was said, and how'd that go down?
So that aspect was really good. President Biden brought up with Putin that critical infrastructure of the United States should be off limits to attacks. And he even gave Putin a specific list of 16 critical infrastructure elements that should be off limits when it comes to cyber attacks. And of course, Putin, yes, he denies the cyber attacks and such, but it's good that President Biden was trying to bring it up and hold Putin accountable and say, this is not acceptable. You need to conform more to international norms and rules and standards. And you can't just be attacking what is most essential to our economy, like energy and water supply and food and things like these. So I was very pleased with the way that President Biden handled the cyber attack issue today at the summit.
Yeah, I think it's going to continue. I hope that something will come from it. I don't know if there will. I know human rights were discussed. That's a big issue. What did Biden raise today, and how did Putin respond to those?
Yes, President Biden brought up human rights as a big issue, which I thought was very positive as well. He brought up Alexei Navalny, who, of course, remains in Russian prison. Of course, President Biden is referring more to Navalny's potential death rather than his present imprisonment, which I think President Biden should focus more on, because I think the goal should be to get Navalny out of prison and not just wait till he dies to focus on that and how it would really damage relations even more so between the U.S. and Russia. But it is good that he raised the Navalny issue. He also brought up the fact that two U.S. citizens and former Marines, Paul Whelan and Trevor Reed, remain in Russian prison, and they need to be released. And President Biden mentioned during his press conference that they will be continuing discussions in the future regarding the potential release of those two. So it's good that he brought that up, and President Biden also said that he would continue to raise human rights in the future. But of course, on the flip side, I'm sure that Putin did not take President Biden seriously when he was talking about this. And I mean, President Putin doesn't even mention Navalny's name. He won't mention him by name because he's a Putin critic and all of that. So it's, yeah. I mean, I don't really know how much of an effect Biden had, but it is good that he raised this issue.
Well, I want to take a few calls for you, too. A couple people want to join the conversation. The number here is 888-914-9149. Denise is listening in Chicago. She has a comment for you, Alexis. Hi, Denise. Good afternoon.
Hi. I was really kind of shocked that Biden did bring up Nord Stream 2, the oil pipeline that's going directly to Germany. And when he gave a press conference and the press asked him, and it's mostly a ridiculous, it's the most ridiculous press conference I've ever seen, but nonetheless, Putin wasn't there. Usually with a summit, you'd have both leaders there. But Biden said, oh, he denied any connection to the Ransom Capital oil pipeline and the beef industry hacking. He denied it, and Biden just stated that he goes, oh, he admitted that they had nothing to do with that. He acted like, well, of course he was telling the truth. Right. He acted like he didn't really understand what Putin was saying.
Yeah. All right, Denise, thanks. Hey, a couple things there. I mean, the pipeline, too. I maybe didn't come up because that's a done deal right now. Right, Alexis? Although, you know, the Russia had invaded Crimea. Now that they have this pipeline, it's going to hurt Ukraine economically. What do you make of that? I mean, that's a huge issue. I mean, he stopped all the pipelines here in the States, but permitted that one to be completed, and that'll get plenty of fuel into Germany. And how does that empower Russia in the days ahead with our allies?
Yes, actually, that's a very good point that Nord Stream 2 is not brought up today. Of course, President Biden has been weak on this issue. I mean, just a few weeks ago, he waived U.S. sanctions on the pipeline, which is not a good decision because this pipeline, like as you said, would affect Ukraine negatively in their economic sector and just drive the gas market away from them. And the pipeline is at least, I think, 95% completed. It looks like it'll probably be completed by the end of the year. Of course, I think the U.S. should do everything in its power to prevent it, but it does not seem like that will be the trend this year. With the ransomware attack, I think that President Biden should have pressed Putin more on that and ask him, where are the rest of these funds? Because we need that. And it wasn't right for a ransom to be asked of this U.S. company. Those are very good issues to bring up.
And to her other point, I mean, they agreed to hold separate press conferences. That's why Vladimir Putin was not with Joe Biden after that was over. But let me take a break. When we come back, we'll take a few more calls. If you're on hold, I'll get you on the air. The number here is 888-914-9149. I want to look at the future of Russia, too. How long will Vladimir Putin be in office? Well, how does he view Joe Biden? Does he view him differently than Donald Trump? We'll get into that and a whole lot more. Our conversation continues. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Wouldn't it be nice if we actually did get along with Russia?
Your life connected. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
And that was former President Donald Trump who said that. Wouldn't it be nice if we got along with Russia? Right. Took a lot of heat for saying that. And if you're just joining, we're taking a look at U.S.-Russian relations. Big meeting, of course, today in Geneva between the two world leaders. I'm joined today by Alexis Marachek. She hails from the Heritage Foundation, an expert on Russia. And we'll take your calls, too. In fact, Roddy, Alexis, I think is saying the same thing here. Let me sneak him into the conversation. Roddy's listening in the land of Lincoln in Illinois. Hi, Roddy. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you, Ms. Marachek. University of Chicago professor of international relations, John Mearsheimer, is considered by many the foremost expert of international relations, said we should be cultivating Russia as an ally to contain and deter China, because China, in purchasing power parity, its GDP, its economy is larger than us. Now, it's the existential threat to us. Russia's economy is only, in purchasing power parity, GDP, 20% of ours. Yes, they have nukes. Yes, we have nukes. But those are really unusable weapons, except by accident. So we should focus on our real existential threat, which is China, because it's more powerful economically than us, and will eventually be more militarily powerful.
Roddy, you're such a great call. I'm so glad you called in with that, and it's such great points there. Let's talk about that. I mean, we started with this clip of Donald Trump saying, why shouldn't we be friends, or whatever he had said there. Wouldn't it be great if we had better relations? Why aren't we moving in that direction? And to Roddy's point, he's right. I mean, during the Cold War, I mean, economics played a huge role in the U.S.'s victory over that. China is a rising threat. What are U.S.-Russian relations like, and why can't we be friends as opposed to enemies?
I think, honestly, that Russia and China are threats on their own, and I don't think it would be wise for the United States to get closer to Russia in order to deter China. I think that we need to treat Russia and China on their own because, yes, of course, China is a huge rising threat and its economy is enormous. And just with COVID and all that's been happening over the last year, there are many different issues regarding China that are a threat to the U.S. But Russia is also a threat. It has just a huge just military capacity. It does have these nuclear weapons. Yes, maybe they're not being used, but it still has these abilities and capabilities. And I think we need to treat the Russian threat for what it is. And also with the fact just that Vladimir Putin is still in power and he will likely remain in power until at least 2036. Yeah. And he will keep doing his military adventurism abroad and threatening the NATO alliance and just keep meddling in Ukraine and having a presence in Georgia and all these different areas. So I think that we need to treat the Russia threat on its own.
And let's talk about their military for just a second here. During a summit meeting supposed to be working out differences and between the two countries, Russia is they're flexing their muscles. They're having these war games only a few hundred miles away from our own nation, our own territory. What do you make of that? And what does that say about how they view Joe Biden's leadership and the United States?
Yeah, so just this past weekend, the Russian Navy conducted what at least Russian officials are calling its largest exercise in the Pacific Ocean since the end of the Cold War. So that is a big deal. I think that is something definitely to watch. And I think zooming out a bit, it shows that Putin doesn't take the United States completely seriously, but I also think that he's wanting to test President Biden. I mean, we're still less than 5 months into President Biden's term as president, and there's still a lot to be seen. I think also President Putin of Russia was testing Biden with the military buildup along Ukraine's border. So, yes, it's happening on our front. It's happening on our allies' front and our partners. And so it's important to remember just that President Putin is not on our side. He's on Russia's side, and we need to be bolstering our forces and being able to defend ourselves.
To that point, I want to talk about two things. One, the man, Vladimir Putin. But before we get into who he is, how did he view Donald Trump, and how does he view Joe Biden? Now, here's a man, as I pointed out a little while ago, he has dealt with a lot of presidents, a lot of administrations, and to your point, he is going to be here to 2036 based on the fact that their constitution had been changed. He's going to be around for quite a while, and he knows, you know, a couple of years from now, there'll more than likely be another president he's going to be dealing with. How did he view Trump? I'm curious about that. And how does he currently view Biden? And is he just biding time for the next administration?
To be honest, I still don't fully understand how Putin viewed President Trump, just because President Trump was so unlike any other president that we had before. Yeah. And he's very, very different from Joe Biden, of course, as well. But President Trump did have a pretty soft rhetoric on Russia, which was definitely concerning at times. But it was clear that in his 4 years as president, his administration's actions on Russia were pretty tough. He kicked out Russian diplomats and spies from U.S. soil. He closed down the Russian consulates in San Francisco and Seattle. He sold weaponry to Georgia and Ukraine in defense against Russian aggression. And he imposed multiple rounds of sanctions on Russia, including after the Skripal poisoning in 2018. And that happened on UK soil, so one of our allies. I think President Putin probably respected Trump to a degree, just because of how tough Trump was in his actions on Russia. Regarding President Biden, I think it's still too early to be seen how Putin views President Biden, but it's obvious that he feels a bit wary of Biden, but I don't know if he fully takes him seriously quite yet.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. So Vladimir Putin, former KGB, you know, operative member of the KGB, I should say. Who is he? I mean, what do we know about him? What are his long-term aspirations? As we point out, we're going to be seeing him for another decade and a half at least, as long as he lives to be that long, but fill us in on the man who is Vladimir Putin. And I know he thought one of the greatest tragedy was the fall of the USSR, you know, and is he looking to somehow resurrect that? What's his end goal?
Yeah, well, like you said, yeah, he's a KGB, former KGB officer, I should say. He's been basically in power over Russia for the past 21 years. Yep. Even when he was, quote unquote, prime minister, he was essentially still president.
Exactly.
I would say that he has imperial ambitions. I would not say that he has Cold War ambitions still. Mm-hmm. I think that he wants to essentially expand the Russian Empire again, which explains the annexation of Crimea and the war in the Donbass that's still going on today. Russia still occupies 20% of Georgia's territory, and that's the kind of the south of Russia. You know, the adventures in abroad and in Syria. And so I think really that Putin wants to expand Russia, and then also with Belarus going on, because that's been a whole issue for almost the past year, just with all the protests there and just Lukashenko cracking down on his people. And Russia and Belarus already have a framework agreement to create a joint state, a union state. And I feel like potentially this year it could happen that they formally and completely create that union state and they would become one nation. So that would definitely threaten NATO allies that border Belarus, and it would be a huge security issue.
Yeah, you know, when it came to Crimea, too, I was surprised. I mean, he rolled in there with his tanks, took that over. Why didn't NATO, why didn't anybody do something to say, hey, enough's enough? Why did they give him access? Is what, the Baltic Sea there or the Black Sea? What body of water is that right there off of the Crimean Peninsula there?
Oh, off Crimea? That would be the Azov Sea and the Black Sea.
Azov Sea and the Black Sea. So why wasn't there more pushback on that? Why did they let him roll in there?
I don't know completely, to be honest, but I mean, Crimea used to be Russia's. I'm not saying that it rightfully belongs to Russia now because Russia gave it to Ukraine several decades ago. But I will say this did happen at the tail end of the Sochi Olympics. And so I think the world's eyes were focused on the closing ceremony of the Olympics and seeing this as a huge positive world event. And so Russia was able to use that as an opportunity because the world was distracted and they sent their little green men into Crimea and just slowly, or well, actually pretty quickly took over the peninsula and then sent people into the Donbass. And there are separatists there who align with Russia now. And the war has been going on for over 7 years now. So it remains a huge issue.
Well, Alexis, thanks for being with me today. I know I have a moment left. I want to get people plugged into you. Of course, they can read your work at the Heritage Foundation. And, of course, you can follow her on Twitter, at Alexis Maracek. That's spelled M-R-A-C-H-E-K. And I hope to talk to you again soon. We'll continue to monitor what's happening. And thanks for being here.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
All right, it's Alexis Maracek. Final thoughts here as I wrap up the conversation. You know, this is the month of the Sacred Heart. Our Lady, when she appeared in Fatima, asked us to pray the rosary for the conversion of Russia. I don't think that is a message that has grown old. I think we need to do that both for Russia, for China, for North Korea, so many of these other troubled nations, because prayer changes things.